But first, ladies and gentlemen, be upstanding for Laura. Laura, let me start with that issue I raised. Why is it that Australian politicians are so reluctant to use the term climate change in any circumstances?
It is perplexing, isn't it, Philip? And I was thinking the other day, how come we're back to this point of climate change or coal? I mean, why hasn't this really emerged beforehand? But it's been bizarre in the last 24 hours or so that we haven't been apparently able to have any conversation about climate change in the context of these absolutely catastrophic fires. I mean, it's not like you have to have a sort of a road to Damascus moment and say, look, I was wrong, I've ignored the science for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, and now I suddenly see the error of my ways. It would just be a matter of saying, look, obviously something's happening that hasn't happened before, and now we have to deal with it, and we're going to have to change the way we deal with it, not even the fact that we're going to have to try to sort of counteract it. But I think people just get stuck in these absolutely ridiculous positions and they don't seem to be able to move from them. And it's not just bizarre, but profoundly depressing.
I was listening to RN Breakfast this morning as I drove down from the bush, and someone who claimed to be the Deputy Prime Minister was on. His name escapes me. Can you identify him for me?
Michael McCormack. I was going for a bit of a power walk, Philip, and I actually started yelling out loud in the street, which is, you know, possibly quite mad, but also unprofessional of me. But it was an extraordinary interview by Hamish McDonald. And Michael McCormack, first of all, was essentially saying, look, you know, this has got nothing to do with climate change, and it's only greenies who talk about that. And when he was confronted by Hamish about the fact that apparently we couldn't even talk about climate change, he kept on defaulting to attacking the Greens. Now, you know, it's good fun to attack the Greens, but we've had these extraordinary statements and interviews with people who are on the ground. For example, the mayor of the area where two people were killed by these bushfires, and she was not making a political point. She was just saying, look, the climate is changing and we have to do something about trying to deal with it. But more importantly, be in a position to counteract the impacts of it. And whenever Hamish McDonald said, well, look, no, I'm asking you about what the mayor says, Michael McCormack would sort of default to the Greens. And then he was confronted with this letter that had been written by 23 former heads of emergency services, including Phil Koperberg and various others. And he suggested that these people were all fronts for some other sort of organisation. Now, what drives a deputy prime minister to do this? Is it because he actually believes this, possibly? Or is it possibly because he is in such a state of being besieged within his own party that he has actually lost touch with reality? And at the risk, Philip, of being a bit editorial in an ABC sort of way, I'd suggest it was probably the latter.
I feel rather guilty, literally, about being here tonight, because in my part of Australia, the upper Hunter Valley, we're deemed to be in a catastrophic situation tomorrow, and I probably should be there rather than here and may have to return. But I didn't get much pleasure out of the government's drought package either.
Look, the drought package, I mean, I suppose what I would say about the drought package is that they have, I think, actually thought about it. They have tried to think about what they can do about the drought in terms of they can't fix the drought, but they're trying to think about sort of innovative packages that they can deliver. But the sense you get out of it, Philip, is that they are completely constricted by the fact that they must get to a budget surplus. And as a result, they don't want to spend any money straight away. And we did a big package on the drought for 7:30 last week. And the realities of what the government has done so far really sunk in. The fact that they announce these big amounts of money and then nothing happens because the bureaucracy cuts in, possibly conveniently. And, for example, the Prime Minister announced $30 million of money for households. This is money that's going to be distributed by organisations like the Salvos and the Vinnies to households of $3,000 to help pay them the sort of day-to-day bills. So it sounded really great on the 27th of September, but early last week, the paperwork for organisations like the Salvos and Vinnies to actually apply to distribute this money was put up on the website. So it still hasn't actually been approved for them to do this. So it's probably another few weeks before that happens.
Laura, talking about paperwork takes me to the Labor's review of the election campaign, which you've described as a rich vein of material for students of politics. I would have thought it's more a jugular vein.
Well, I think it is a rich vein, Philip. We have to be grateful for, you know, any relatively frank assessment of what went wrong in politics, which gives us some access to what any major political party had available to it. And so I don't think we should discount the ALP review in any way, shape or form. It's got a lot of really interesting information in there. You know, some of it sort of vaguely horrifying, the fact that there was not a campaign committee, that there was not a campaign strategy, that essentially it was all being run out of the leader's office and that everybody basically stayed mum and just went along with things, because a lot of the people involved in this are still running the Labor Party in a parliamentary sense. I think it is very interesting from that perspective. There's a lot of dodging around, you know, the role of various people, particularly Bill Shorten, in the review, but it is a really fascinating view of how, you know, people who are supposed to be at the centre. I mean, there's a lot of criticism of the media in the election campaign and, you know, whether we got it right or wrong and all that sort of stuff. But in the interests of self-interest, you would expect Labor to have a fairly good feel for where it was going wrong or right in the election campaign. And the absolute debacle that is painted in the review is a fascinating study for students of political history, I think.
I'm having a mingle with Tingle. Laura, how did Albanese go at the National Press Club?
Look, I think he went pretty well, Philip. I don't think anybody's actually paying all that much attention to what Labor's got to say or what Anthony Albanese's got to say at the moment. But I think the reality is that when he became leader, Anthony Albanese started to talk probably too much, you know, without actually saying anything, which drives people mad in politics. I think we started to hear the real, if you like, Anthony Albanese at the press club on Friday. It was a succinct speech. They were very sharp answers to questions. He's trying to say, well, look, the Labor Review shows everything that we did wrong. I'm trying to throw it forward now. I'm not putting out any policies, but I'm doing all this stuff like I've actually reconfigured the National Secretariat. I've reconfigured the offices within the parliamentary party. I've got rid of John Setka. I'm trying to I've got a review going of Sussex Street, the wonderful organisation that the New South Wales Labor Party has festered on for all these years. I'm addressing the moral image problems of the Labor Party, and that's a really important thing. And I'm going to completely change the policy focus and, more importantly, the position of Labor. And I think Labor at the moment is in such a state of who do we actually represent conundrum that it's going to require a really big change of position, and it's going to require time. And essentially Anthony Albanese isn't saying, I'm going to do it all of this straight away. It's going to take a while, and you're just going to have to let me have that time to do it.
Laura, as you hear, has reclaimed her aspidistra, and it's great to have you back, Laura. Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent, 7:30.